This program is an encore presentation of Press Conference USA. It was broadcast previously on The Voice of America.
From VOA, the science edition of Press Conference USA. Here's your host, Rick Pantaleo.
Hi, I'm Rick Pantaleo. Welcome to the science edition of Press Conference USA. My special guest for the program today is Dr. Anthony Fauci, MD. He joins us via Zoom. Throughout his 38-year distinguished career as director of the National Institute of Allergies and Infectious Diseases, Dr. Anthony Fauci led his team of researchers in extensive and groundbreaking investigations into the prevention, diagnosis, and treatment of numerous infectious diseases. He also served as chief medical advisor to President Biden. In the early 1980s, Dr. Fauci became an early pioneer in the battle against HIV/AIDS and is considered to be the architect of PEPFAR, the U.S. President's Emergency Plan for AIDS Relief during the George W. Bush administration. It was in 2020, when the COVID-19 pandemic began, that he became a household name throughout the world. Dr. Fauci recently joined the faculty of Georgetown University as a distinguished university professor with the Division of Infectious Diseases within Georgetown's School of Medicine. Welcome to the program, Dr. Fauci. It's a pleasure to speak with you.
My pleasure. It's good to be with you.
Dr. Fauci, you have played such an important role throughout the COVID-19, HIV/AIDS, and other pandemics, and you are well known throughout the world. I'm sure our audience would like to get to know a bit more about you. Looking back at your career, what are among your most cherished and challenging accomplishments from your work as a doctor, immunologist, director of the National Institute of Allergies and Infectious Diseases, and chief medical advisor to the president?
Well, Rick, I had been at the NIH until recently for literally 54 years, 38 of which I served as the director of the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Diseases. And during that period of time, I've had the privilege of really wearing three separate but overlapping hats. One is as a individual scientist who ran a basic and clinical research laboratory for all of those years. Next, as the director of one of the largest NIH institutes responsible for the conduct and support of research on virtually all infectious diseases throughout the world, from the common infections that we see here in the United States to global infections like malaria, TB, and HIV. And then thirdly, one that you mentioned, in my position involved in policy development, and I'll mention that in just a moment. So if I could just briefly outline the direct answer to your question of what within those three hats I'm most proud of and feel good about. You know, as a scientist, most of the people who know my public image are not aware that I have been a basic and clinical scientist for decades. And I'm proud of the fact that during my career, I have made some, I believe, reasonably important advances, both in the field of autoimmunity, namely a group of diseases that are inflammatory diseases of vessels called the vasculitity, which back in the 1970s, seems like a long time ago, I and my colleagues developed a therapeutic regimen for a group of diseases such as polyarteritis nodosa and what was originally Wegener's granulomatosis and then has been renamed as polyangiitis with granulomatosis. We developed therapies that made diseases that were essentially uniformly fatal have a remission rate of over 90%. Then when HIV came, I devoted the next 40 years, 40, to trying to delineate the nature of the pathogenic mechanisms of HIV disease, which led to insight into the ultimate development of therapies and understanding the mechanisms of disease. So that's one hat. The other hat, when I became director of the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Diseases in 1984, I did a number of things to elevate the field of infectious diseases, which at the time was really a relatively minor component of NIH, to now the second largest institute, but particularly to develop and create the AIDS program, which together and in collaboration with the pharmaceutical industry was largely responsible for the development of the entire menu of drugs that have now completely transformed the lives of persons with HIV, to the point of now it's no longer a death sentence and people can live essentially normal lives. So I feel good about that accomplishment. And then the last was as a policy person, where I've had the privilege of advising seven presidents of the United States, dating back to President Ronald Reagan. And particularly notable was my interaction with President George W. Bush when he tasked me, through his own vision and commitment, to put together a global program that was involved in getting treatment and prevention for HIV to the developing world, particularly sub-Saharan Africa. And that program is now known and has been known. We did it 20 years ago. I started it and was the one of the major architects of it that was established in 2003, called the President's Emergency Plan for AIDS Relief. And that program has now, 20 years later, been credited with saving 25 million lives globally. And then finally, what you mentioned about COVID, I directed the institute that was responsible, together with the pharmaceutical industry, in developing the highly effective COVID vaccines that clearly now has saved millions of lives worldwide. My team at the Vaccine Research Center, led by Drs. Bonnie Graham and John Mascola and Kizzy Corbett, played a major role in the development of the vaccine. And the number of investigators, Jason McMullen and a bunch of others, all made major contributions, but they were within my institute and overall under my leadership as director of the institute. So all of those things over a very extended career, I feel good about.
Dr. Fauci, I'd like to talk a little bit about each of those highlights you mentioned. First of all, I guess we would talk about something that it seems a lot of people aren't talking about much these days, and that's COVID-19. Now, looking back, once you started to see cases of COVID-19 developing and spreading, what steps did you suggest in mitigating the spread of the disease?
Well, I mean, my job as the director of the institute was the scientific element of the response. So that's what I mentioned just a moment ago, that I mobilized our team at the Vaccine Research Center at NIAID to do something that in fact is completely and totally unprecedented in the history of vaccinology. And that is to go from the awareness of the genomic sequence of a brand new virus in early January of 2020, and within days, to have a vaccine program going, a phase one trial in 65 days, a phase two trial in 118, 120 days, and then 11 months later, to have a vaccine going into the arms of individuals that was highly effective to the tune of 94 to 95% in preventing symptomatic disease, and even higher in preventing severity of disease. That was my task, which my institute gladly and aggressively approached. I also was part of the COVID response team at the White House, whose overall responsibility was to guide the public health response. I did not lead that in the Trump administration. I was a member of the task force, but when Biden became president, I became his chief medical advisor.
Dr. Fauci, I've been curious about this for a long time. Your thoughts on doing your work in a very public eye, what was that like?
Well, I mean, obviously, it's unusual for a scientist and a public health official to be so much in the public eye the way I happen to, by circumstances, find myself in. And I learned early on that the only way that you can efficiently do your job is to focus like a laser beam on what your job is, what your mission is, and what your goals are, and to not be distracted by the public element of it, by the fact that you're very well known or that you're on TV or that you're in the newspapers a lot. I mean, that's fine if you're successfully, which I believe we did, spreading scientific truth and evidence for the purposes of promoting the public health. But if you get caught up in that, you get distracted. And I tried as best as I could to just focus on the science and the fundamental principles of public health.
Along with the development and implementation of the vaccines, can you tell us about the many COVID-19 therapies for patients that were developed and refined under your watch, and how many millions of medical professionals were helped by the NIH treatment guidelines in using these interventions?
Well, Rick, that's a good question. So right from the very beginning, the NIAID, our internal scientists, as well as the many, many more grantees that we support throughout the country and in some respects throughout the world, but mostly within the confines of the United States, began developing drugs that already had been developed for other diseases like remdesivir, and began testing them for their efficacy against COVID. And we've partnered with the pharmaceutical companies such as Pfizer, who developed a very good drug called Paxlovid, which is very effective in preventing progression of disease leading to hospitalizations and death, as well as other drugs like molnupiravir, which we again partnered with the pharmaceutical company. In addition, we were very much involved, as always, partnering with the pharmaceutical companies to develop a group of monoclonal antibodies that at least early on we used successfully both in the prevention and in the treatment of COVID-19. That has been a success story. Unfortunately, the virus tends to mutate and get new variants, which evaded some of the originally successful neutralizing antibodies against COVID. And then there's also the situation of the guidelines that you mentioned. And the guidelines was something that Dr. Cliff Lane and I and outside investigators like Dr. Gulick from Cornell put together to provide a resource to the rest of the country and the world to look in real time at the data on treatment of COVID as it literally came out immediately, rather than waiting for the months that could take for publication, and to advise the community, the clinical community who were taking care of COVID patients, what the most recent science-based and evidence-based data are in a guideline form. So that's what we did in the realm of treatment.
Dr. Fauci, how were you able to handle and react to some of the very mean-spirited criticism from not only politicians, but from the general public throughout the COVID pandemic?
Well, Rick, it goes along with what I said before. You have to concentrate on what your mission and your goal is. And so long as you stick with the integrity of the science, the evidence, and the data, even though that changes over a period of time as the virus evolved. And I think that's one of the sources of confusion on the part of the general public, because they think science is static. And what you say in January or February is absolutely going to hold true a year and a half later. Well, that would be true if the virus never changed. But as we know from experience, the virus evolved into multiple variants over the more than 3 years that we've had experience. But with regard to the attacks on science, it isn't just on me. There's unfortunately an anti-science theme reflected by an anti-vaccine theme in this country, which is very disturbing, because what it does, it ultimately prevents people from access to and implementing life-saving interventions So I don't pay attention to the personal attacks. That's just part of my job. It's unfortunate that it occurs, because what I think it does would discourage young people who are interested in going into science. When you have attacks on science, and I must say, very dishearteningly, even among some elected officials who do that, which is really very disconcerting.
Let's take a break now. You're listening to the Science Edition of Press Conference USA on the Voice of America. I'm Rick Pantaleo. I'd like to remind you that Press Conference USA is available for free download at voanews.com/PCUSA. You can also find our show on Apple Podcasts and other podcast platforms. Be sure to connect with us on Facebook at Carol Castiel VOA or Twitter at Carol_Castiel. Our email address is PCUSA@VOANews.com. We'd love to hear from you. Now let's get back to the Science Edition of Press Conference USA. Today we're talking with renowned physician, scientist, and immunologist Dr. Anthony Fauci, MD. Until his retirement last December, he served for 38 years as the director of the National Allergies and Infectious Disease Institute, and he was chief health advisor to President Biden. Dr. Fauci recently joined the faculty of Georgetown University as a distinguished professor. Dr. Fauci, I'm remembering in March 2020, after the WHO declared that COVID-19 was indeed a pandemic, that experts were saying it could be months or even years before any vaccine would be developed and would be available to the general public. Miraculously, 9 months later, COVID-19 vaccines were already being administered. You credited your colleagues at NIH and the pharmaceutical companies responsible for developing the vaccines. Aside from the vaccine success, to what extent were you and Dr. Deborah Birx hamstrung by then-President Trump's denials about the severity of the pandemic, where he downplayed and even mocked the use of masks and how slow it took to get an institutional strategy in place?
Yeah, I know, Rick. I don't want to get into any details about that. That's a story that has been hashed out. Debbie Birx wrote about that in her book. I, as you know, was put in an uncomfortable position because I needed to preserve my own and my scientific integrity and my responsibility to the American public. On some occasions, I had to disagree publicly with the President of the United States, namely President Trump. And I really had to do that because he was saying things that were just not true, that the virus was going to disappear like magic, like hydroxychloroquine was a cure-all for COVID, which I knew it wasn't, even though he had people around him who, when I said that, viciously attacked me for saying that. So I paid a bit of a price for sticking with honesty and data and evidence and preserving my own integrity, but it was worth it because I would rather be on the right side of the truth than to compromise my principles. But that was not a comfortable thing because I did not take any pleasure in contradicting the President of the United States, because I have a great deal of respect for the office of the presidency of the United States. And it was painful, but I had to do it because I really owed it to the American people to tell them the truth.
Dr. Fauci, as you just mentioned, so much misinformation was spread throughout the pandemic and people didn't really know what was going on or what to believe or trust. How do we make sure that this doesn't happen again?
Well, Rick, that's a good question, and I don't think it's going to be an easy answer to that question. We have to keep essentially being proactive in talking about data, evidence, and real science, and get consensus among highly respected individual scientists as well as scientific organizations that are trusted. And there are many of those. There are many physician and public health organizations that can be trusted. I know the CDC has taken a bunch of hits over the year, but they are still a very solid, trusted organization, as is WHO, as is the Infectious Disease Society of America, and the American Society of Microbiology, and the American College of Physicians. and the pediatric associations. All of those are the ones we need to listen to. Every once in a while, you're going to get outliers, even people who are scientists, who have credentials, who come out and say things that are just not true. I guess you'll have to say that's human nature, that you're going to see a few bad apples in every group. But I think if the overwhelming majority of people who care about the truth and data and not misrepresentation, conspiracy theories, and a variety of untruths, that we can overcome that by the truth, by data, and by evidence.
What are your thoughts on the importance of cooperation and communication from the global public health community?
Well, it's absolutely essential. I mean, pandemics, by their definition, just the word pandemic means all or everywhere. Every country in the world has been involved with COVID. We will have other pandemics. There's no doubt about that. I have been lecturing on that, Rick, literally for more than 45 years about the emerging nature of infections and how pandemics will occur. They've occurred before recorded history. They've occurred in our lifetime, and they will occur long after you and I are gone. So the only way we're going to be able to address them is if we have global collaboration, cooperation, and transparency.
Dr. Fauci, what lessons, if any, did we learn from the COVID-19 pandemic?
Well, there are many, many lessons. One is that pandemics occur and you must expect the unexpected. The other is some of the failings in society that are brought with a bright spotlight shown upon them by the stress of a pandemic, such as the disparities in health among economically disenfranchised people, people stigmatized because of race and ethnicity and class. Misinformation and disinformation is the enemy of public health. And we've learned some positive lessons, like the investment in science, both basic and clinical science, which led to the extraordinary accomplishments that we've just discussed about the record time that we made a vaccine and developed some of the therapy. So there are positive lessons and there are sobering lessons that we learned from the COVID pandemic.
Let's move on, if we could, Dr. Fauci, to HIV/AIDS. You were pretty much on the front line at the very beginning of the pandemic back in the early 1980s. How has the understanding and treatment of HIV/AIDS evolved since those early days of the epidemic, and what role have you played in advancing these advancements?
Well, I mentioned it a little bit ago that my role as the director of the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Diseases, which was responsible for funding the clinical trials networks and the fundamental basic scientists who, as always, together in partnership with the pharmaceutical company, was responsible for developing now the dozens and dozens of drugs, which when used in a combination of two or three drugs, has completely transformed the lives of persons with HIV to the point when I began taking care of persons with HIV in the early 1980s, being infected with HIV was essentially a death sentence, where the overwhelming majority of people, if left untreated, would die. And only beginning in 1987 with AZT, and then culminating in the 1990s, beginning in 1996 with the triple combination, which continued to be improved and refined until the present day. We can say now that if a young person is newly infected with HIV and gets put on an appropriate therapy that brings the level of virus to below detectable level, that you can predict that they will live, all other things considered, an essentially normal lifespan, maybe a year or two less than the actuarial prediction, but very, very close to a normal lifespan. That is an enormous contribution that was made by the scientific community, And I'm very grateful and honored that I played a role in that.
And you mentioned this a little earlier, saying that it's inevitable that there will be more emerging infectious diseases and more pandemics and more epidemics. What are some of the potential threats of future pandemics that you see? Is there anything we need to be aware of? And how can we better prepare for them?
Well, you have to prepare generically for it. We have a program called the Prototype Pathogen Approach, which means you look at all of the classes of pathogens, mostly viruses, which are the ones that spread rapidly among people, even though other pathogens can do that. Most likely it would be a virus that is spread generally by the respiratory route. If you look at the history of pandemics, they are really unpredictable. So you have to generically prepare for it. We have chosen about 7 or 8 families of viruses in which we are doing some fundamental spade work research on prototype elements within that family, so that when a virus emerges from that family, because those families are those that you would predict would most likely be the source of the emergence of a pathogen of pandemic potential, you start developing platforms for vaccines, diagnostic assays, animal models, immunological correlates, et cetera, so that when a pathogen does emerge, you're way ahead of the game. And probably the most important preparation is what I mentioned in the earlier part of the discussion, and that is to continue the sustained support of basic and clinical biomedical research, which was the reason why we were able to so successfully respond to the new COVID coronavirus that emerged at the end of December, the beginning of January of 2020.
You retired from NIH and as President Biden's chief medical advisor at the end of 2022, but from what I understand, you haven't really retired. You are joining the faculty of Georgetown University. Congratulations.
Thank you.
What will you be doing at Georgetown?
Well, I have been appointed as the Distinguished University Professor in the Department of Medicine at Georgetown Medical School and in the McCourt School of Public Policy. And one of the things that I would hope to do in that role over the next several years is to serve as a model or an inspiration to younger individuals and hopefully encourage people by what I have done, interacting with them, getting them to know me, perhaps teaching a bit with them so that they might be inspired for a career in science and hopefully in a career in not only public health, but public service. So I'm aiming my efforts at the younger generation.
Dr. Fauci, I'm afraid we're out of time already. And I want to thank you so very much for taking time out of your very busy schedule to talk with us and share your insights with us. Thanks again so much, Dr. Fauci. It's been a pleasure and an honor.
Thank you very much, Rick. It was very nice to be with you. I appreciate the opportunity.
That was Dr. Anthony Fauci, MD. He's the former director of the National Institute of Allergies and Infectious Diseases and was the chief medical advisor to President Biden. Although he retired from those positions in December 2022, Dr. Fauci recently joined the faculty of Georgetown University as a distinguished university professor with the Division of Infectious Diseases within Georgetown's School of Medicine. Dr. Fauci joined us today via Zoom. And I'm afraid that's all the time we have for this science edition of Press Conference USA. Thanks for listening. I hope you enjoyed the program. This is Rick Pantaleo reminding you to be sure to join Carol Castiel next week for another Press Conference USA on the Voice of America.